Hello, everyone, and welcome to Super Metal World. It's Michael.
And it's Ty.
Today, we are going to be discussing Metallica's controversial album, Saint Anger.
Yeah, definitely not the first one we thought we would be discussing by Metallica, but, you know, it's actually coming on its 15th year anniversary in June. I think the album was released early June, and yeah, we figured we want to talk about it, because it's still an album you constantly hear about. They, Loudwire, I think, or maybe not Loudwire, but one of the news sources had posted this guy who played Frantic on an actual, like, trash can.
Okay.
And he was saying
I saw that.
He was saying that it sounded better than, he thought it sounded better than the original recording, which he probably does have a case for that. So, anyway, with we just want to put it out there, or I want to put it out there, that this is not really, like, an album review, although we are going to review the album. But we're not going to go as in-depth as we usually
do. Not a song-by-song.
Yeah.
Deep dive.
This is like a historical, we're going to be giving like historical context and all the things surrounding the band outside of the album that led to the album kind of happening and being made the way it did, really.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So remember to check us out on all of the social medias. We are available on Twitter and Facebook. You can find us there.
Instagram.
You can listen to Super Metal World on iTunes and Stitcher.
Please leave us a review or a rating. That helps get our show out there, and it's much appreciated.
And we are available at www.supermetalworld.com, and you can send us an email at supermetalworld@gmail.com.
If you want to be on the show, or if you want to send us a track or something like that, if it's good content, we'll play it eventually. We got plenty of stuff that we'll probably do another indie metal radio episode. Without further ado, let it run. Hard to know where to begin with this because it's a complicated album, complicated podcast. There's a lot of bits and pieces to try to put together, which is almost unfair because, you know, as like an average listener, you're just like, that's a good album, that's a bad album.
Right.
So yes. It's not like we're just trying to give reason to why this kind of occurred the way it did, just to like add some understanding and some intrigue to it. I mean, I would say it's not Metallica's my favorite band of all time, and this is not my favorite album.
Right.
You know, I think this is a fair album. I call it fair.
Fair.
And that is like one grade below poor for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it does what it needs to. There's a couple songs that I think are pretty good that I'll get into later, but it's not really one that I go back to a lot. You almost have to go through something probably pretty personal to like want to go back to this album.
Yeah, it's a pretty intense. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know, it's for as controversial of an album, you know, it's important to set up context around it, right? Mm-hmm. Like most people aren't going to dig into it or care, but with as much, you know, shit that gets flown around when discussing this album, I think it's important to bring up those points about,
right,
why is there so much shit being thrown around?
Yeah, because I mean, I kind of get frustrated by it sometimes. So our main question was going into this podcast, Saint Anger is widely considered Metallica's worst album or a historically bad album. Can we make the case for Saint Anger and say, hey, it's not, you know, it's not a historically bad album? Or is it really as bad as everyone says? That's what we kind of were looking into going into this podcast. And let's just talk about the state of the band and take you back in, or back to 2003. Say the band. Jason Newsted leaves the band. Why does he leave the band? Because he wants to do outside projects. He wants to do outside projects, but the way it had always been organized within Metallica is that you can't have any side projects. And James Hetfield effectively led to, you know, he ixnayed that.
It's right.
Like, no, Jason, you can't do any outside projects. And Jason left the band shortly after, you know. And it left kind of James wondering why he left the band. Because this is a band, you think these guys would talk all the time, but from everything that I've read through interviews and online, and, you know, prior to, like, sustained anger happening and them having like the therapist that came in and all of that stuff. This band didn't talk about feelings and emotions a lot. They kind of went in, they did their business, and things were ran how they were ran. I don't know. It was very like macho way of doing things.
Like, were they, so they must not be that close, or at least before, I
think they were close in a way that, you know, guys are close who don't talk about their feelings as much, sure. You know, but when you're in a band like that, you're essentially in a family, and there can be dysfunction that occurs, and you need to talk about certain things. And I think that's why all this pressure built up why a lot of this ended up happening. But, you know, if you go back to, you know, way back when the band started, you have, you know, I know there's Ron McCubney was the bassist for a while, but there's Ron, James, Dave, and Lars, you know. Yep. First it's just James and Lars. You know, Lars puts in something in the newspaper clipping looking for a guitarist, and him and James jam for a while. And James didn't initially think Lars was a very good drummer, which is kind of funny. And initially that's kind of all the further it went, but Lars had, you know, he comes from a good family, a wealthy family. His father was like a professional tennis player from...
Oh, wow. Really?
Yep. And Lars was actually recruited to be, or not recruited, but they went to the U.S. and Lars was to pursue tennis.
I didn't know
but
that.
But the kids in the U.S. were just a lot better than him.
Okay. He's Danish,
and,
right?
Yeah, and yep. And Lars is Danish, but yeah, his dad was a super good tennis player and made his career off it, and they had a lot of money, or they still do, and obviously they have more now because of Metallica. So there's nothing really bad with Lars's upbringing as far as the relationship with his parents. I think he's very close with both of his parents. His dad actually has an Instagram. I forget his dad's name, but he's just like old Danish dude with like really long gray brownish hair, whatever. Interesting guy. His name almost came back to me, but it's like Tobin or Torb.
I'll look it up.
It's something like that. Anyway, and the reason that James really liked hanging out with Lars back in the day is because Lars had this huge and expansive record collection, and he knew all of these like exotic bands from back in Europe.
Yep.
And this goes hand in hand with the new wave of British heavy metal when all those types of bands were coming out, and Lars really introduced James to a lot of these bands. Because actually, James was a fan of like early Motley Crue, like before they went kind of glam.
Okay. Yep.
And there wasn't much of a metal scene in America yet. It was mostly in Europe. So anyway, but James comes from a, you know, his family dynamics are different. And I'm getting, this will all make sense as we continue with the podcast. But James' family dynamics are very different. His family was like Christian Scientists or whatever.
Yeah, like, yep.
And very strict, and like no medicine or no, I mean, they're just strict with like how you can treat, like you basically pray yourself out of illness. You know, you can't have like conventional medicine.
No doctors or anything like that.
Yeah. I don't know how strict that is, but it's something like that. And basically his mom got cancer. She got something. If it wasn't cancer, something that was like terminal.
Yeah.
And she died, and she tried, you know, she refused any type of conventional medicine to help with her illness. And his dad abandoned the family. I can't remember when that occurred. I'm going off of memory on this a little bit, but his dad abandoned the family. Okay. So then James basically is like, you know, he abandoned the family before the mom died.
Okay. Yeah, great.
Let me first say that. And so for a while, James, and I think James had siblings, like brother and sisters, but James was like one of the men in the house, you know, and then his mom passes away, and then he's just, you know, it's just him and his siblings, I guess. But anyway, he was very reserved kid, not a lot of confidence, you know, and for a while they didn't even know, you know, he didn't want to be the singer. He was the singer on Kill 'Em All, and even after Kill 'Em All was recorded, they were still hoping to get another singer, and they actually
really?
Yep, they really wanted the lead singer for Armored Saint. Can't remember his name, but that's who they actually wanted to take over as the singer for Metallica. Just a little interesting info there. So anyway, James has this history of like family history, and he's not he's a to himself person, doesn't let his feelings out, reserved, whatever, not a lot of confidence, but he has Metallica, and Metallica grows, and then he gets confidence through Metallica. He gains his identity through Metallica. All of a sudden, he's the guy from Metallica, but outside of being the guy from Metallica, he doesn't really know who he is. You know, he's just the guy in Metallica, and that can lead, you know, to a lot of things that, like, being a rock star lead to. You know, like, you know, they had the nickname Alcoholica for a reason. And I think Kirk, to a certain extent, although I could not find this specifically prior to the podcast, I think he maybe had some family issues, but I don't want to speak out of hand with that.
Right.
So there's potential that Kirk had some things going on.
Well, he saw some.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, we just read that on Wikipedia.
Apparently, Kirk Hammett, as a child, was traumatized by his neighbor, like, raped his pet dog.
Yeah, when he was I can't remember how old he was, but like,
there's a quote where Kirk talks about, yeah, he washed him, he pulled down his pants, and he started having sex with his dog. Like,
ugh, that's so fucked up.
Like, don't know that it's, you know, the cause of the issues with Saint Anger, but it's a very
somehow we'll tie it.
It's a very just a side note that I think is important to bring up.
Yeah, that's something,
or at least interesting to bring up.
But then let's not even forget that. So I mentioned Ron McCubney, and as soon as they found Cliff, who was playing in a different band at the time, you know, they're basically like, see you later, Ron. This guy's really great.
You don't say no to Cliff.
Yeah, and then Dave gets kicked out, ironically, because he drinks too much, but I think it was because he was very violent when he drank.
Okay.
Whereas the others probably just got drunk and did, you know, usual dumb shit. I think Dave got more aggressively,
fought people, yeah,
and that kind of stuff. So anyway, so there's already some drama going on, and then Cliff dies, of course. So so the band's definitely been through controversy. And anyway, to bring it back to 2003, so Jason leaves the band, and he was in the band for about 14 years prior to leaving, and he never really felt like a complete member. And Lars even kind of said that through one of his quotes out there. He said something along the lines of, like, he was never really fully accepted as a member by the band, and that's because, again, they didn't know how to deal with their feelings with Cliff, and Jason took a lot of the heat for that. I don't think Jason ever got the creative say that he wanted within the band, even, and that's why he was trying to, like, have a creative outlet.
Right.
He's got to do something somewhere.
He's a musician.
Yeah, he's got to create. He wanted to create, and of course that got shut down, and he became very withdrawn, and he left. So then he leaves, and then shortly after, James enters rehab. And James enters rehab, and on top of this, this is also coming after the whole Napster debacle that kind of shined a poor public image at the time on Lars and Metallica in general. And they're still trying to shake that image. And so basically there's just this pressure that's building within the band. So James is in rehab, and he doesn't know, you know, how long he's going to be in rehab. So Kirk and Lars are just kind of twiddling their thumbs and not knowing if Metallica is going to exist, and if they can, you know, like, what are they going to do outside of Metallica? There's, like, you know, they're all thinking in their head, like, is Metallica done? If it is done, what am I going to fill this void in my life with? And they came very close to not being a band anymore. And this is something that's documented pretty well in the... It's some kind of monster documentary.
It's great. It's a great documentary.
It's a really good documentary, and kind of showcases all the trials and tribulations. And in fact, I would almost encourage that if you feel a certain way about Say Anger, or if you haven't listened to that album yet, I would watch that documentary first to, like, give yourself all this kind of context, and then go listen to the album. And not that maybe it won't change your opinion, but maybe you'll be like, okay, I understand why this happened. I understand, you know, how this creative output came into existence. And on top of that, it had been a while since they'd released, they had released only really Load and Reload.
Yep.
So, and that was like, what, 95, 96, something like that, 97 maybe?
Mid-90s.
And of course they had their Garage Days, which came after that, which they're all cover. It was a good, very good cover double album, but not original
stuff. Right, it's covers.
And then they did the S&M,
yep,
San Francisco,
yep,
orchestra there, and also really, really well received. And I think Woodstock was in there too. One of the last Woodstocks got fit in before Saint Anger, or maybe, well, it may have been during Saint Anger. I can't remember. But anyway, so what I'm trying to say is that it had been a long time since like original content came from Metallica. And I'm sure everybody was wondering, is this going to sound like Load or Reload? Or are they going to come back to that style that...
Whatever, yeah, everyone is like...
That, yeah, that we've
looking
been...
Looking for their big three albums. Is it going to be like that? Or is it going to be... Yeah, even at the time, there was the rap metal slash new metal...
Right, sort at the release of Saint Anger, that was taking hold, where you had the bands like Limp Bizkit and Linkin Park and...
Korn was big at the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, just more the new metal, rap metal scene. And even, you know, even during the 90s, grunge happened. And I always say that grunge kind of messed up metal and kind of took it off. Not that it completely ruined it. We got some good things in the 90s, but like it threw metal for a loop, put that way. And a lot of our metal icons had some moments in the 90s that they weren't very proud of, I'm sure. Or maybe they are. They're just different moments, I guess. They're different outputs. I can't say they're not proud.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say that. So what are the issues that people usually have with Saint Anger? There's no guitar solos. Lars' drum sound, which is probably the most iconic thing that ever gets talked about with Saint Anger. The lyrics and the song arrangements. I can go through these a little bit. As far as no guitar solos, this was something that the entire band agreed on. You know, I don't know if people get confused and think like Kirk got shunned from a guitar solo. He definitely tried, and it just, they all collectively didn't think it fit the mood of this album, and it took away from it or almost dated it. And also, just to make it a little more like, around that time, guitar solos were seen as like not as cool anymore.
Sure.
During that era.
Yep.
It's like, oh, that's just so like, I don't know, like cocky. It's almost cocky to do a guitar solo or something.
Like we were just discussing, like the landscape of music at the time with new metal, like, you know, does Linkin Park have any guitar solos? Like, do those types of bands, like, they don't
off of Hybrid Theory and Meteora, I don't think so. I think they, you know, guitar solos became cool again. And then if you look at like, what is it? Minutes to Midnight, or that one with like More Sorrow, and then they started to introduce some leads again. Leads started to thank God enter music again. You know,
well, you like old Slipknot, and like no solos.
Yeah, and then of course you look at new Slipknot, and there's solos,
yeah,
and Limp Bizkit. There's only old Limp Bizkit. Well, there is new Limp Bizkit. I don't know if new Limp Bizkit has solos.
I don't either. I don't think anyone knows.
Let's move off him as quickly as we can. Although I would love to interview him at some point. So actually, I like Limp Bizkit. I like his music for a certain reason.
Yes.
It does provide me a certain happiness, but we don't have to get into that too much. Anyway, Lars's drum sound. This is a big one. And this is one that's hard to defend, really.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, all I can tell you is... they wanted to make this album sound, you know, Bob Rock had produced this album, and he's the one who worked on like all of Metallica's albums since the Black Album. And he's worked on Motley Crue albums like Dr. Feelgood. The guy knows how to make good sounding records.
Yes.
I don't really like Motley Crue, but I really do like the sound of like the songs off of Dr. Feelgood. And of course, of the Black Album. Like, they're well mixed albums. And a lot of people were saying, well, why is the drum sound like this? Why is this album sound mixed like it is? You know, with Bob Rock being the producer. And I guess he was just kind of, he wanted to throw the rules out the window. You know, he'd known, like, this is how you record an album. This is the way it should be done. And he wanted to say the hell with it with this album. And I think Metallica was also on board for that, saying, this is just expression. This is raw, emotional stuff. Let's, like, spend not a lot of time at all with, like, Pro Tools or, like, you know, I think one of the quotes they say is, like, he used to spend hours trying to get the perfect snare sound for the Black Album. But on Saint Anger, he spent like 5 minutes setting up the mics. You know, they just wanted this, like, and there was like, James didn't take as many takes. He didn't try to get the perfect take for vocals. He didn't go back in and like tune James if he was off tune. You know, so that
super raw.
That was the idea. They wanted it to sound like this. They didn't want solos. Lars wanted some kind of different. I get what he wanted something different. I get what he's going for. It, to me, it's not like as bad as people say. I don't think it's, I don't know. What's your feeling? You're more of a drum guy than I am. It's definitely not good.
No, it's not good. I think there's a few songs that we'll get into that are not as bad as others.
Sure.
But there are certain moments where, like,
it's very tinny.
It's like very tinny. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a, well, I have a quote here from Lars. He says, "One day I forgot to turn the snare on because I wasn't thinking about this stuff."
Lars wasn't thinking about that stuff.
"At the playbacks, I decided I was really liking what I was hearing. It had a different ambiance. Mm-hmm. It sang back to me in a beautiful way." So Lars was into it.
And nobody stopped
him. Bob Rock, the producer, was into it. Mm-hmm. I guess they were just into it. Yeah. I'm not particularly into it.
Right.
It doesn't like ruin songs for me. I feel like it, you know, sometimes it slips in, you know, nicely. Other times it's like this obnoxious gong that has like way too much
extended
ring to it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like if you even think of like when Saint Anger first starts, you know, but then when they really start riffing and he's like
gong, bashing gong, on
it,
gong.
I can definitely see where that comes from. And you know, it's just I don't know. It's definitely not great. But I think at some point it's like it's got to the point where it's like a meme now.
Right.
And like it's almost like people are playing it worse than it actually was. It's not one of those things where you hear it, you're like, oh my God, my ears, I'm bleeding.
It's not unlistenable. It's just not good.
Right. It's just like, it doesn't really like add to the song. You know, in fact, sometimes it does take away a little bit because you're like, wow, that's a lot in my ear right now. Like a lot of like reverberation and like, yeah, it's whatever. The lyrics. People would say the lyrics are sophomoric, what I've heard.
What does that mean?
I would just say like more amateur and
a little childish.
Just more, you know, it's more raw emotion. Again, same reasons. It's more like raw emotional. I don't think there was like a way to think about like how can I make this, you know, how can I make this sound like, I don't want to say smarter, but how can I make this sound
eloquent?
Yeah, eloquent. It was more like this is my raw, what I'm feeling. I'm gonna say it. And the other thing is, like, the writing process was completely different
for
this album.
Did they, like write the lyrics as a group? Or wasn't it, really strange?
Yeah, so they wrote lyrics as a group. And before this, you know, James was very possessive with his riffs and his lyrics. And it was his say.
Okay, yep.
But as part of his therapy, because eventually, I never did tie up that loose end. Eventually, he did obviously come back from therapy.
Yes.
And it was hard for him because he was in rehab, and when you're in rehab, you're in this safe little cocoon, you know, and it's easy to have things under control, but when you have to go back out into the real world and then try to apply those concepts that were taught to you in therapy, it can be very scary because you don't want to relapse, you don't want to have something trigger you. So it took him a long time to like ease his way back in, and that's kind of what the Some Kind of Monster documentary is going through, because he's still like pissy in that documentary, and they have the therapist there. I don't know if he's probably a different therapist than what James was seeing, or maybe the same one that James was seeing when he was in rehab. Probably not, actually, now that I think about it, because I think he was in a separate rehab facility for an extended period of time. Then he came out of that rehab facility, and then he just tried to kind of ease his way back into like life again.
Sure, and the band got a different and...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too, to help him, to different also therapist. Help him transition into it. Okay, regardless, because of his therapy and everything, you know, he kind of changed who he was as being like more open person and talking more about his emotions. And like, because I guess if you don't know James, he's very just like a man's man. I don't know, like just speak, one of those like speak little, say little guy, you know, he's not gonna say a lot.
Yep.
He's probably different. I'm sure he's different now after the therapy, but probably before that, you know, it's like, guys don't talk about feelings with other guys, you know, like
it's not manly.
Yeah, exactly. And anyway, so then so he brought all the other band members and they would try to write lyrics and they'd all kind of sit and write everything together. Even like the riffs and the songs and everything was more of like this all-inclusive process, which at the time was needed, but they don't do it anymore. It's not something they do on Death Magnetics, not something they did on Hardwired. Because as James put it in this interview I was reading, I'm paraphrasing, halfway saying it the way I remember it, so this isn't a direct quote, but he was saying how they almost became too open to where like, everybody was just accepting of every idea, and they didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings because they're all just very vulnerable at this time.
Yep.
So he's like, we don't do that anymore, but for that album, it served its purpose and it was something that kind of needed to be done. Song arrangements was the other thing I was going to mention. The songs can be long.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
They're long songs. Yeah. It's like the album is like an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I think all of the shortest song on the album is right around like 5 minutes, 5 minutes and 14 seconds. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like, but I mean, from a length perspective, I don't know, whatever.
And I think this album has some of like just the most raw, aggressive. I actually like a lot of the riffs on this album.
Yeah, instrumentally, like from a guitar standpoint, yeah, I think some of it's very good.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's a very frantic album. I hate to be that like lame, I mean, but I mean, that's just how it comes across. Like, it's cathartic.
Yes.
You know, this album should have been called Catharsis. This is real Catharsis. Machine Head's album, that's not Catharsis.
Yeah.
This is legitimately Catharsis.
Yep.
And yeah, it's just, it really comes through with the lyrics as far as like, you know, what they chose to write as the lyrics, the drum sound, the riffing, James' vocals and how he delivers those vocals. Personally, people say that he doesn't do a good job on this album. I think he does a good job on this album.
James, as like a vocalist?
Yeah, I think he's very raw and aggressive in this album. There's some moments that I like are iffy, but they didn't do repeat takes, you know, like sure. That was part of their plan. And
yeah, like I think some of like when he is like singing in an aggressive manner, mm-hmm. I think it's good. I think some of the stylistic choices on some tracks are questionable. Yep. You know, he like does some, we'll get into those later too, but
yeah, we'll table that for now, but yeah, we'll get into it. So anyway, this all kind of started when, just lately, it's been like a grind my gears moment because I've loved Metallica since I got into metal, always been my favorite band. And when I first got into Metallica, I didn't realize that there was like hate on this band.
Okay.
You know, that people just like to hate them.
Yep.
And then the more you like take away your innocence and become an adult, you realize how that people suck.
Yep.
But then, so lately it's just been really bothering me. And I was like, it's a good time to talk about St. Anger because of this. And also it's a good time just to talk about like, why is Metallica hated on? You know, what happened? So I'm just going to point out like that one could say since St. Anger's release, it's been hipster and cool to hate on Metallica. And here's some of the reasons why.
Okay.
Okay. It's cool to hate on him because Lars Ulrich can't drum.
Okay.
Okay. Kirk Hammett uses too much wah pedal. James' voice isn't the same. Costs too much to attend their show. That's all I had for now. There's more. There's definitely more.
Yeah, I'd say that those are probably the biggest offenders.
Those are like the main ones.
Yep.
Why? Like, it's not like Lars Ulrich cannot drum.
No.
He's never going to be like Portnoy or like, who's the Rush guy? The guy from Rush.
Oh, Neil Peart.
Yeah, he's never going to be those type of drummers.
No.
But like, Metallica's always been a unit. You know, they're just a solid unit together as a unit. They're Metallica and they're great. And yeah, I don't think he's entirely prolific, but there's still a lot of like moments in his songs, especially like their older songs, like off the Black Album or Master Puppets, where I'm like drumming along. Mm-hmm. Like he has good fills and like they're not complicated fills, but like they're memorable. And
yeah, I would,
like that's like saying not quite to this extent, but that's almost like saying that Malcolm Young isn't a good guitarist or wasn't a good guitarist because he didn't come up with complicated things.
That I think is a pretty accurate parody or analogy there.
Parody.
I don't know.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Parody, not parody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, I was reading an article about Lars talking about like how he knows he's not like.
Yeah, he's not
a prolific drummer.
He's not like ever made the case and said like, guys, you know, I'm the best drummer in the world. You know, he's never said that.
No, I don't think anyone has ever said ever like. It's never been. I don't know why. Yeah, I just don't understand that argument. Why people shit on Lars for not being a.
I think. Do you think this started at St. Anger, where like they're like he chose this drum sound, so from now on we're just gonna say this guy can't drum.
I have no idea.
I just don't. I don't know. I don't think he can't drum. I think there's moments where he's very effective, and especially on their classic albums, he has a lot of parts that I really like. So,
I think it might have something to do with the Slayer Metallica
feud. Yeah.
Because Dave Lombardo is like a very good drummer.
Right.
He's technically like a very good drummer, better than Lars. And it's probably like a battle there. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's just funny because like there's always these arguments of like, well, yeah, I could say that Yngwie Malmsteen is like this prolific guitarist, but in reality, like, sure, he's great, he's prolific, but Kirk Hammett has more memorable things going for him than Yngwie Malmsteen does. Does that make sense?
Elaborate.
So people are, you know, it's just like, you think of Yngwie Malmsteen, or you think of like Joe Satriani,
yep,
and you're like, those guys are phenomenally technically proficient guitarists.
Yes.
Which they are.
Yep.
They probably are more technically proficient than Kirk Hammett.
Okay,
but who's more famous and who has written more memorable things?
That's true.
You know what I mean? It's just like music, just because you're the best at something doesn't mean you're the best at something.
Or the most like iconic. I don't know. I don't understand where a lot of this goes. This is way outside the scope of this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just life in general. But, you know, being the best, technically the best at something doesn't mean anything if no one knows about you or has,
or you never like, write anything or create anything memorable.
Yeah, right.
You know, and this kind of goes, I kind of talked about Kirk too, but you know, he uses too much wah-wah. You know, when did the wah start? Kind of Black Album-ish, or did he use a little wah on?
I think he's always
kind of like, even on Master of Puppets, now that I'm thinking back to it, I think he's always like subtly used some wah.
He's always been a wah guy.
But it's just part of his style. I don't know. I suppose you could say that like as of late, his leads haven't been as memorable.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. It's tough.
I don't mind.
What do you want out of the guy? Are we expecting these guys to write Master of Puppets again? I'm sorry to say, I'm shocker, but it's not going to happen.
I would like to see more, I don't really care if it's a lot of wah or not. I just don't want to see, I feel like he gets into a trap of just hammering on a few notes and wahing.
Yeah, I mean, there might be like some scales that he is more likely to scale.
Sure. You know, it's just kind of as like a safe.
Yeah. But I really think, and not that we were talking about Hardwired here, but if you give Hardwired a good listen, he does have some pretty solid solos. Halo on Fire, very memorable solo there, and Spit Out the Bone, he's got a great solo in that. And but I mean, it's so hard to like top what he's already done. You know, I mean, those are iconic, and metal really isn't in that place anymore. You know, metal's not at the forefront like it used to be. So it's not like he wrote this. Like, Hardwired, to me, was a good album. A very good album. Mm-hmm. But, and it did well. You know, it still went number one for Metallica. They still sold well, yada, yada. But it's not like it, like, took over the pop charts like the Black Album did.
Right. Yeah, it's not like in everyone. You know, it's like just the nature of the music and how it is right now.
Right.
It wasn't in everyone's ears across... Yeah, you know, all walks of life.
Yeah, because even like the Black Album, there's some memorable solos from there. But I agree. I think he needs to. I mean, who am I to tell Kirk Hammett what to do? But I think there are times where he's more lax.
Yeah,
it'd be nice if you know he buckled down and
like I'd like to see him, you know, get some sweep pick type scales and sort of.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, like, yeah, something outside of his style. Yeah. That brings us to James' voice is leaving him. I think we've known that for a while. I mean, he's blown out his voice before, and I mean, he's a force to be reckoned with. But I think he's done a good job now at like working with what he's got. He could definitely sing better than he was able to.
Yeah, I think. I know we talked about his delivery on Saint Anger, and I don't mind it in like the moments where it is like raw and aggressive. I think he does a good job.
Mm-hmm.
and Death Magnetic, I thought performance was pretty weak. I didn't really like his vocal performance in that album.
Sure.
But I feel like he kind of came back. There's a bit of a resurgence.
Yeah, and I mean, I like kind of Hardwired, I think. Again, I'm very happy about that album, but I think he performed really well. Like on Hardwired, Moth into Flame, like, you know, the more prominent ones that were out there, Atlas Rise, like, I think that is, like, spit out the bone again. Top notch from him for what he's got left in him as far as his vocal delivery. And, yeah, he's just, I guess it's sad to say, but even, like, a lot of those guys just don't sound like they used to anymore. They're older now.
No,
like,
you can't scream into a mic for years.
We were just talking about the new Judas Priest album, which we're going to review at some point soon, and how Rob were debating whether he could hit that extra octave anymore.
Yeah.
He still sounds great.
Man, yeah.
But we're wondering, like, there are some songs where he didn't go that extra octave like he has done in the past.
It felt like it needed it.
But
couldn't
he
get there.
Yeah.
But what do you expect?
But he didn't really try. It wasn't like he tried and failed to get there.
Right.
He just didn't go there.
Right.
And that makes you think, well, maybe he doesn't have it anymore. But I don't know. I mean, James is older. I'm not going to just shrug it off. It's definitely not what it used to be. He's not black level, justice for all level James. Like, that's James in his prime. He's not in his prime anymore.
Nope.
Yeah. I guess that's all we can say about that. Cost too much to attend a show. We were talking about this. Yeah, I guess it depends. If you compare them to other bands or if you're buying resale.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're buying resale, you know, that argument just doesn't work.
Yeah, right. But I mean, like, okay, we paid for general admission, which is what we wanted. We paid $150.
Base value is $150.
Yeah. And actually, with taxes and everything, it ended up being that. Base value was less.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like $125, and then you add the face value. You add all the taxes and all that bullshit, and then it's $150. Because I remember, you know, about two tickets ended up being like $300 and some.
Yes.
$305 or whatever. Anyway, if you wanted seating, it was somewhere in the $60 range. I don't know.
I mean,
I don't really feel like they're asking you to take out a loan to go to their concert if you buy it, if you get lucky enough to get them.
I think the question is, are they expensive? Yes. Mm-hmm. I think the answer to that question is yes.
Yeah. I mean,
are they too expensive / overpriced?
If they are, it's like, I don't know. You'd have to compare it. They're not in the same. You can't compare them to like Slayer and Megadeth tickets. I'm sorry, not to throw shade to those bands.
No,
but like,
I mean, no.
Slayer's not going to sell out a stadium, and neither is Megadeth.
And like, I don't know.
I love both those bands, but they're not going
supply and demand. I guess it's the way it is.
Yeah.
It does suck. It's unfortunate.
Right.
But a lot of people want to go to that show. I don't know.
Like, but does it really suck? Like, for me, it's like, I know it depends on, like, sure, to the average person who's like, I would like to see Metallica, and they're not like a big fan. They just would like to see them.
Right.
They're like, oh, those are expensive.
They're going to get shitty seats or they're just not going to go.
But for me, like, they don't tour America that frequently anyway. Usually during an album tour is when they, or album promotion is when they do it. For me to shell out that once in a while is not.
Once every like 5-10 years.
It's not very, it's not a big deal. Oh, that's another thing that we, how they never play in US. That's another thing that they get flack for. But newsflash, every metal band plays more in Europe.
Yep.
Just a newsflash.
It's like European tours are American bands' dreams.
And it's like that for every metal band. I mean, go check out Trivium's tour.
Yep.
See how much time they spent in Europe and how much they avoided where Michael and I are in the Midwest because we really wanted to see them.
There's no one out here. No one lives here.
Yeah. And Metallica's coming back for this one. They had these initial dates and we were bummed because they did not come to see us. But now they're coming back and they're going to all these smaller markets, which is really bizarre to us. As a reminder, we live in Fargo, North Dakota. They're playing in Grand Forks, North Dakota, which I'm sure nobody's heard of at all.
It's like there's like 50,000 people that live there.
Mm-hmm.
It's real small. Don't know why they're doing it.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're doing
it. Yeah, it's awesome. Like, we're really looking forward to it, obviously. But that's where it got into the cost too much to attend the show. There was a little debate about that. So, does it cost too much? I would say it's just it's on the higher end.
It's
on the higher end. But if it's your first time seeing them, guys, it's worth it, in my opinion. This will be my third time seeing them. It's a great show, and oh, here's my major point about this. They usually have two other really high caliber bands that you're getting to see for that price.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, like Michael and I paid the same price when we saw them at US Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, and we got to see Avenged Sevenfold and we got to see Volbeat. So I mean, you're getting
for like $30 to $50 at a venue that you're going to see them as a headliner.
Yeah,
so you get to watch them open. You know, which is great because they get pretty. I mean, it's pretty solid set time
for both. Yeah, both Volbeat. It was first Volbeat, then Avenged Sevenfold. They both got solid times. And I don't know who's opening for Metallica this go around, but usually at least one of them is like a one. You're like, oh yeah, definitely. Yep. So anyway, so then I was thinking about all this, and I was like, you know what? In reality, Metallica has been getting flack and this sort of thing since the release of Ride the Lightning back in the early '80s. When people were giving them shit for having a power ballad, Fade to Black, you know, and then of course people gave them shit on the Black album. They sold out, you know, or sold out. I'm putting that in quotations, and then I was just telling Michael because we obviously talked about this a little outside of the podcast, and I was saying they're kind of like the Yankees or the Blue Devils, the Patriots, even the Warriors today, or the Heat, Miami Heat back in the day when LeBron played there. They're just successful. And therefore, they're easier to hate on because they're always doing pretty well.
They're always like in front of you.
Yeah, they're there. I mean, they're the face. They're the flag of heavy metal. You know, it's just that is what it is. And then this is my own personal thing. And Michael can say what he wants to say after this. I think in reality, they're kind of the Michael Jordan of heavy metal. If we're going to continue with our sports analogies, so they may not have created it. But they kind of rose from the ashes. They were exactly what you want an underground metal band to be, trading tapes, playing stuff that was not mainstream. You know, they were just doing their own thing. You know, fuck everybody, metal up your ass. And they brought metal to this cultural relevance and respect in a way that was never done before. So much so that they had to literally make a metal category at the Grammys.
Yeah.
And that was because of Metallica. And this is my big point. This is in a way that Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Slayer, Megadeth, Motorhead, etc. could not do. Metallica did this. Black Sabbath may have created it. You know, of course they did. God bless them.
Yep.
And, right. and all those bands I mentioned, I'm not a hater of any of those bands. I respect the hell out of all of those bands. And they definitely help raise awareness. But it was more, it almost started off gimmicky and like talking about devils and crucifixes and how spooky can we be and how, you know, let's talk about fighting elves and orcs and this is something that Metallica even did talk about a little bit on Kill 'Em All, like some of their lyrical content, like Jump in the Fire and Metal Militia and, you know, even they fell into that
those
types of themes.
Very classic old school metal themes.
Yeah, and not, you know, not that just Metallica did this, but then it became more of a thoughtful and social commentary, which is more of a, like Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets and Justice for All. You know, like
okay.
these were albums that had a thought, something to say about society or like personal struggles that maybe some of these earlier albums didn't as much, you know, because they're just, it was more about the shock factor and the show, the stage show, like, how much can I, you know, even Slayer wore makeup for a while, you know.
Like, did they really?
Oh, yeah, in their earliest days. You know, it was a get up. It was a.
Sure.
Not that it was bad. I like that music. I'm just saying it was different. Like, and I don't think it got the respect of, like, people say, like, oh, that's just metal drivel. We're not going to make a Grammy for that, you know. And then eventually, you know, as Metallica was doing this, they weren't the only band doing it, but they were in the limelight the most. And they were doing it the best. Like, I don't know how else to sugarcoat that, but they were. And doing it on their own terms. Because during all this time, you know, he had all the glam metal and all they're singing about is stupid love ballads and just, you know, like good times and having sex. I mean, like, it wasn't anything like really deep.
Like, basically, okay.
It was surface.
The Nickelback of that time.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, that's all we're getting at.
Never made it as a wise man. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, it was more on the surface stuff about having a good time.
Right.
You know, which is nothing's wrong with that either.
No.
I'm just saying that Metallica took it, rose it to like a cultural respect and relevance. Okay. But obviously they didn't do it alone. But they were the main one that broke through and that like everybody was like, man, this band's going to be something. This band's going to do something. And eventually they did. And I will just say that no other band before, and I still think no other band since, has had the same cultural impact like Metallica had as far as a metal band.
Okay.
Of course, like Nirvana.
Right, okay, metal band.
Yeah,
metal, okay.
As far as a metal band. And it's something we should be proud of as metalheads. I mean,
yeah.
Like, they basically took metal from this gimmicky thing that was still fun, still was good music, and they wouldn't have got anywhere without the help of Black Sabbath and all those new wave of British heavy metal bands and Judas Priest. You need all of that foundation. But they took it from the bottom, took it all the way to the top, and they made everybody aware, their household name, obviously. More so even than Black Sabbath. People are still going to know Metallica more. You ask any kid, you know, one's more of a household name than another. Even with Judas Priest. I mean, those are legendary bands. Even with Iron Maiden. They're just a household name. I don't know what else to say about it.
I find it's very interesting to me. Maybe it could be because Metallica is still big within the metal community during like the age of information, you know, the information age with social media and all that.
Yeah.
All that stuff where they're still like in it. Whereas the bands you discuss, like the new wave of British heavy metal bands, are not.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the cause of all of the hate? Because I'm not seeing like Black Sabbath and those bands like get as much. Like,
right. They're not getting hated on as much. I think it's just like, I don't know if it's just the decisions. It's just really hard to understand for me too. I don't know if it's the decisions Metallica made. You know, they pretty much played themselves out with Injustice for All. They're like, you know what? As far as thrash metal and progressive metal is concerned, we're pretty burnt out now. We want to try something different. So then they did the Black. This should come to no surprise because they've always done whatever the hell they've wanted. You know, they've never like went with a trend or something like as far as their sound, or like went with exactly what their fans, you know, their fans probably wanted in Justice for All or Master Puppets Part 2 or 3.
Yes.
Some of them, not all of them, of course. But then they came out with the Black Album, which was highly successful. And then I guess just to see people who weren't, you know, probably they saw these people as posers, all of a sudden were Metallica fans. And then, you know, and then they did go in a very much different direction with Load and Reload. And their career's just a little more storied. I don't know Black Sabbath is entire history as much discography as much to tell you. Did they have moments like this where they
true.
But they were never in the limelight like that. Like Metallica's always been like there for everybody to see and to critique and to like have an opinion on.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like the old legends were there to set a foundation.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of them climbed and rose to very impressive heights.
Yeah.
But without, you know, Metallica was built on that foundation
and
was propped even higher because of that foundation.
Right. And then it just changes things. The Black Album sells 15 million. You know, Black Sabbath never had an album that's touched that. Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, they've never touched that.
That's true.
And therefore, they're not as well, I don't know, they're just not out there as much. If you told somebody, you know what, I just don't like that one Judas Priest song. Or not song. I don't like that one Judas Priest album in the 90s. And they'd be like, okay. There'd be like no other conversation. But like if you have like a discussion, if you say to somebody, you know what? I actually kind of like Load. Then you're going to get a reaction out of most metalheads. Everybody just thinks they have the right opinion on Metallica. I don't know. They've just always been there.
That's true. Everyone's a critic.
Yeah. And they're just, I guess they're the most easy to criticize because it's like, their greatest achievement and sometimes their crutch is that because they brought it to these heights, they're just looked at under a microscope. I mean, every move they make, every breath they take.
We'll be watching them.
Yeah, we will be watching you, Metallica. But yeah, I still think they're waiting for somebody from metal to take the torch. Take it and be the greatest. I still think they have it.
I would agree.
Like, I'm in terms of like you can't argue, like, you can say that people have made better albums, which they have. You know, Mastodon's made some great albums, but none of them have had this cultural impact to, like, okay, taking the torch.
Right.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
I'm taking the torch. We are now, like, the household name metal band. Like, haven't really seen anybody come close, to be honest with you. It's just the way music is now. I get that, but, like...
Maybe, like, Avenged Sevenfold, like, with... Hail to the King, yeah, like that was like kind of right, like a, maybe that one.
Yeah, like, and yeah, and that's why they're, you know, they always tour with Metallica, yeah. And I'm sure Metallica views it that way. Like, hey, you get, we like what you're doing, and but it, like, people, I know people are, some people are probably fuming listening to this, but like, but there is nobody. Like, there's a lot of great bands, trust me. And yes. I would like to see somebody take the torch. I love Metallica. I'd love somebody else to take the torch so I can continue to enjoy Metallica and you guys can go criticize that other band till the cows come home. But it just hasn't happened yet. And you know what? When that does happen, it's going to be a great time for metal because it means we're going somewhere else. You know, like somewhere new and exciting or something. I don't know. Something, some cultural shift occurred. You know, it's just... I don't know. Like metal started in like the 70s and... It all led up to, like, you know, it kept getting more and more notoriety through the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Black Album happened. And then now we've just been on, like, coast mode.
Coast mode. I feel like, you know, coast mode with a slight incline.
Yeah.
But, right. Yeah, it's interesting.
It's just, like, I'm just waiting for, like, something big.
We need to find a metal historian.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like... I'm trying my best, guys, but like some of this I could be a little off on, and I apologize, but I'm definitely not a guy who like can remember the date, exact year and month, and if I had to not talk about my favorite band, this would be a more of a struggle. So anyway, let me glance at my notes here. So like I said, for all these reasons that we've discussed, you know, their careers looked at more under a microscope. Is Saint Anger like a perfect album? Fuck no. We're not trying to say that. We're not trying to say it's like this hidden gem and it's actually their best album.
It's actually perfect and everyone just doesn't like it.
Clickbait.
Yeah.
Is Saint Anger secretly perfect?
Yikes.
Is it historically bad as some of the masses and the haters would tell us? I say no. But, you know, I say no. I say it's fair at best. I say it's a fair album. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but whatever, since we're just talking about... We'll get into the songs, I promise, at some point. But for me, it's actually still my least favorite album, even though
we're
talking about all this. If I was going through and I did a ranking somewhere on here. Oh, let's see. Right here. So I did kind of my pantheon of Metallica albums. And for me personally, it goes... Master of Puppets and Justice for All. Those two sometimes can interchange for me, depending on what I'm feeling. But those two are always at the top. Master of Puppets and Justice for All. Ride of Lightning. Self-titled. The Black Album. Kill 'Em All. Hardwired to Self-Destruct. Death Magnetic. Load, Reload. Saint Anger. Still at the bottom for me.
Still at the bottom.
I would maybe at some, you know, maybe sometimes I would put it ahead of Reload or Load.
Okay.
But there is, like, there are some, I actually really like Load, more than Reload. There's some good, like, dirty rock type moments on Load. I think Load starts off with, like, 2x4 and,
Ain't My Bitch.
Yeah, I like those songs. It has, does it have the Outlaw Torn on there?
Yes, yes, it does.
It's a really good song. And, pull up the track list. Hero of the Day, King Nothing, you know, like. I think Load is a pretty solid album, actually. I feel like I'm missing one. Oh, that must be Bleeding Me. Isn't Bleeding Me on?
Yeah, it's track number 7 on Load.
Yeah, geez, I'm just blind. Yep, I like that one, too. So, yeah, I don't think I would put it ahead of Load, but some days I would maybe put it ahead of Reload.
Okay.
The notable ones, just for those of you wondering. It's going to be Fuel, Memory Remains, Devil's Dance, Unforgiven 2. Personally, I do like Better Than You. Carpe Diem, Baby. It's a good one. And Attitude. I don't know. The rest are okay.
Sure.
So maybe you're ahead of Reload in some aspects. Did you think of a list like this?
I think I would always, I mean, the front half of the album is, you know, whatever, but
you're talking about Load or Reload, or what do you
mean? I'm talking the front half of your list is, you know, I would have a similar setup, but Saint Anger for me is at the end, but I think I would always put it ahead of Reload.
Do you?
Yeah.
And now that I look back at this, maybe I would always put it ahead of Reload.
I might even trickle Death Magnetic back there too. Yeah.
Okay.
I think,
you
I
know,
think,
as time has passed, I don't feel like Death Magnetic's going to age as well as Hardwired is. I think Hardwired is a much more like profound effort.
Yes.
In that, yeah, than Death Magnetic. I think I like Hardwired sound a lot better. Like the mix is, yep, much better. The songs are a little more memorable. I feel like they, seems like they're having more fun on Hardwired, and Death Magnetic was kind of like, let's try to recreate Injustice.
Yeah, yeah, let's try, like, to be as classic Metallica as we can.
Yeah, and I don't go back to as many of those songs.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, whereas, yeah, so I could kind of see that. I did struggle with that part of the order for sure.
For me personally, Saint Anger is not the worst Metallica album, but the third worst.
And if we're going by like worst, I don't really think they've made like, I don't really think they've made like, I don't think they've made like a shit album.
Right.
I think they've made a couple fair albums with some pretty solid songs on them. Like Reload has some great ones. The few that there are.
Yep. Right. Know. Yeah. But I mean, a lot of it is just kind of like
filler,
I mean, really, forgetable fluff, but you
but
know,
really if Load and good. Reload were released as one.
Yes.
I think there could have been just a great rock album, hard rock album on there.
Yeah, between, yeah, whatever they were doing in the 90s when they released, they were just writing too many songs and not throwing any away.
Yeah, like it was a load.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I don't know what else to say. The other thing, I'm just skimming through my notes. I want to make sure I hit all our points before we get into the songs here. Do you think if any other band put this out, that would get as much hate?
No, absolutely not.
See, that's why I think it's another like fair point to make, is that if it wasn't Metallica, people would probably say, that's a pretty good album.
That's fine.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
You know, when I was just looking at some stats about Saint Anger. To this day, the album has sold 6 million albums worldwide.
Where does that stand?
That was pretty good for
that's pretty good.
A bad album.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know how much Diablos and Musica and Risk have sold.
Yeah.
So about 2 million in the U.S. It won a Grammy for Best Metal Performance, which is for Saint Anger. It holds an average score on Metacritic of 65 out of 100. Metacritic takes all the reviews and aggregates them.
Yep.
And I would just like to point out that Pitchfork, although it did receive pretty decent reviews from all other major reviewers, Pitchfork fucking torched this album. They gave it a 0.8 out of 10.
Oh my God.
And you know that's going to take down that aggregate score a little bit.
0.8?
And if you read it, that is a garbage review.
Is it?
It's just somebody who's biasedly.
Oh,
like,
he just doesn't
like Metallica.
Doesn't like Metallica as a band, so he's going to shit on the album.
Yeah, he's just going to shit on the album. A 65 out of 100, and then one of those reviews that goes into that aggregate is a 0.8. I think that's actually a fair score. I think that's kind of what it deserves. Either a,
I'd say so.
You know, like, I think that's
six out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not that bad. And then I was curious about, you know, just other bands that are really like great bands that have released bad albums, and we've brought up a couple already. Excuse me. Megadeth has actually released Risk and Super Collider, both which are not good albums. Risk is actually probably better than Super Collider. Super Collider is yikes. And I really love Megadeth, but Korn, Path to Totality gets a lot of hate, I guess. That's when they kind of joined the dubstep.
That's like, yeah, the dubstep, mm-hmm. The dubstepy one, yeah.
Yep. Pantera, Metal Magic. One of their first albums, maybe their first album was a glam metal album.
No one talks about
Nobody talks about that. How come nobody can give that shit?
No one knows that Pantera started as a glam metal band.
Yeah, I was like, can we talk about that for a second? Because it's not like Metallica has this hit. Because can you imagine if Metallica had a glam metal album? Oh my gosh,
oh,
never
man.
Hear the end of it. And then, of course, like Slayer's Diablos and Musica. We've mentioned that plenty of times. And I think Iron Maiden and Judas Priest, I can't remember the names of the albums, but they both released kind of some stinkers in there in the 90s or early 2000s, whatever. So it happens. But I think my point of reading all those is that you never, ever hear about those other albums.
Nope.
You don't.
Nope.
I mean, they could, in fact, be worse than Saint Anger, but you just don't hear about them as much. And it's kind of just a conundrum.
Well, it's kind of
we're trying to explain it, but
It's what happens when you are, like, put in front of the most people, or you're put in front of people more than the other bands that we just discussed.
I think that's basically
people get an opportunity to dislike it more.
Yeah, and you know what? It's one of those things where I'm sure there's a saying for this, but it's like those who are like hate or whatever, they make the most noise and they speak the most, but that doesn't mean like. There are plenty of people that like Metallica. And there's plenty of people that, like, I'm not messaging on comment boards, even trying to defend. You know, like, I just, like, dab on those haters.
Jesus. No, I mean, there's no point.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying, like, usually people like that are the most vocal. And it's not like Metallica is, like, maybe by sheer numbers they are the most hated metal band. But they're also probably one of the most loved metal bands.
Yeah.
Because they have a ginormous fan base.
Yeah, what's the... The percentage of lovers to haters.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that was a lot of context to get throw at you guys before we get into some of the songs. But I just wanted to share one quote by James Torben. Torben's the name of... It is Torben.
Torben. Oh,
it's the name of Lars' dad.
Lars' father, yeah.
Yeah, I had to go back and look that up. Okay. So I wanted to share one quote from James. He... had this quote in 2007 for Kerrang, and he said, and he was talking about Saint Anger. He said, "Well, we have no shortage of ideas. What am I going to do? I write songs, I play songs, and I like doing this. I know we're getting older. There's no point in trying to hide that fact. And we might tour less than we did, but as records go, we just want to make a good record. That's all we ever want to do. I mean, we thought Saint Anger was going to be amazing, but it turned out to be more of a statement than Metallica music that we enjoy playing live. It was more of a purge. Just getting that shit out of me as a catalyst for the next chapter of Metallica." I just thought that was just good. Good quote.
Mm-hmm.
So, they've kind of, I think it was just kind of something that just needed to happen in order for Metallica to continue on as a band, in order for them to kind of get back on track, you know, starting with Death Magnetic, getting into Hardwired, and, we'll see what happens with their next output in like 2050.
Yeah.
Whenever we get to
sounds about
time.
Right.
But it's interesting that, you know, maybe they just did have to release it to the masses. But, you know, when you make something like that, I wonder if they ever considered, let's just keep this as a pet project. You know, it's just something we listen to.
Oh, Saint Anger?
Yeah, this like is our little instead purge of thing.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But maybe they needed to release it and be like, get out.
Yeah, I feel like not releasing it would have been the same as not doing it.
Right. Or, yeah, like repressing.
For them. I mean, that's just my assumption.
I agree.
I'm not a, you know.
We're not.
I'm not Metallica.
Psychologist or
I'm not there. Yeah. But I would expect that, you know, there's importance in mm-hmm. a band that has released many albums in the past mm-hmm. by not releasing an album. You're probably not doing yourself any favors.
Yeah. And they just do whatever the hell they want. They did the Lulu thing, which people like. I get that people hate on it, but it's a Lou Reed album that Metallica played that James and Lars played the instrumentation for. And people talk about it like it's not a Metallica album. It's not like Metallica sat and like said, this is our next Metallica album. It's Lulu. It's a Lou Reed release. And I think people get confused by that. I get there's a lot of controversy on that. But who the shit cares? Just don't listen to it if you don't want to listen to it.
I am a table.
I mean, we got to put that pretty good meme out of it. But let's just be clear. Just when you are arguing this with people, say, I didn't really like that Lou Reed album featuring Metallica. You know, it's not a Metallica album, okay? Not officially in a Metallica release. All right. Also, rest in peace, Lou Reed. That guy actually truly was a good musician. Anyway, without getting too long-winded, we hope we've given you some perspective on the Saint Anger album and kind of how it turned out, how it did.
Set the stage for, I don't know, understanding why it resulted in the way it did.
Yeah, and originally we we're actually going to do like a track by track thing. And but I think it's better for you guys to just go listen to the album and kind of make your own interpretations. And I mean, we're not expecting to like really change your mind if you've already heard it, but hopefully, like I said, we've given you the perspective of how this occurred. And and like I said, I think we both just agree it's kind of just a fair album, but it probably just it needed to happen. It didn't probably, yeah. It needed to happen.
If it didn't happen, we probably wouldn't have Metallica anymore.
Exactly. So, with that being said, remember to rate us or subscribe, write us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Super Metal World. And you can email us at email us
just say email us at
supermetalworld@gmail.com. Our website's www.supermetalworld.com. Thank you for listening.
Horns high.
Horns high.